So I'm going to attempt to speak about Rav Shem Tov Ibn Salakera. I have no idea what I'm going to say, but we'll see what happens. He is everyone, I think, that I've spoken about, but he's even more one of those really, really interesting people. You just want to read everything they wrote and find out more about them. Somebody who knew all of philosophy, as well as Jewish texts, and also a poet, and also wrote encyclopedias, I would say a Renaissance man, but he lived a couple of years before the Renaissance, so that would be a bit misleading. If you just look on page 5, you'll see a list of the books that he wrote. I just copied it straight out of Encyclopedia Judaica. But just the breadth of his knowledge. He's writing in Hebrew. He lived in Spain, but writing in Hebrew. So in Igeret HaHagadah Gufa Nefesh, Fine Zeri Agon. I mean, 13th century is not a particularly nice time, not an easy time to be a Jew. So he wrote a book about that. Igeret HaVikuach is a dialogue between a rabbi and a philosopher, showing that both of them, both Torah and philosophy, are compatible. And he's advocating, in all of his books, he advocates studying philosophy and Judaism, which are both two different paths to reach the truth. Reish Chokhmah is one part of his encyclopedia on moral duties, going to say, Sefer Ma'alot, Sefer Mevakesh, the other two parts of it, I think. Sefer Mevakesh is a encyclopedia. It covers every kind of knowledge there is and everything there is to know about, every kind of knowledge that there is. Sefer Nefesh, Mora HaMora is the first commentary on Rambam, even though Rambam didn't want anybody to write a commentary on Mora Nevuchim. Ibn Salakera did write a commentary called Mora HaMora. On the philosophical part. In it, he brings down all of the sources of Rambam, all of the Aristotle and Plato and Plotinus, and everything he's quoting and discusses. By and large, agrees, okay, in a few places, disagrees and argues with Rambam. All of the commentators who came afterwards just plagiarized him, basically, without questioning that's what plagiarism is. So any time any of the later commentaries are quoting Aristotle, most likely they're taking it from Salakera, who was just knew everything. One of the things he was very involved with was defending the Rambam against the charges of the French rabbis, which I'll talk about. So that's one of the incentives he had in writing the Mora HaMora. He wrote a letter, which is published in the Menuchas Kanaot. He translated Mekor Chaim Ibn Gabirol, and it was through his translation, I said last week, that Munk was able to realize that the Christian philosopher who wrote Fon Vitae, was really Ibn Gabirol who wrote Mekor HaChaim, based on Ibn Gabirol's translation. Unlike the Aristotelians we saw before, unlike Ibn Dawud from last week, Shem Tov Ibn Salakera quotes everybody and synthesizes all of philosophy into one package. Does not, unlike Rambam, does not reject non-Aristotelians, does not reject, takes Ibn Gabirol. Deat HaFilosofim is also a philosophical encyclopedia. Igeret HaMusa, Igeret HaZikaron is a history book which you don't have. Igeret HaChalom is available still. There are probably other books of his that were suppressed or no longer available, or either intentionally got rid of by people who didn't like him, or just fell apart and disappeared because nobody cared that much about him. There is an excellent book called Torah and Safir, Life of Shem Tov Ibn Salakera, by Rafael Jospi, or however you pronounce his name, which is really good, and many of the translations I've taken have just been out of his book to save me the trouble of translating them. Everything. Now, okay. We know almost nothing about him biographically. we know when he was born because he wrote in Sefer Mevakesh in the year 5024, according to the reckoning of the Israelites from creation, in the eighth month, the month of the year, my years have passed the midpoint of 70 and the year 40 is approaching. So if in 5024 he was almost 40, then he must have been born approximately 1225. We have no idea when he died, but the last thing we have from him defending the Moreh Nevuchim and defending Rambam against the French rabbis is 1290 or 1290 something, 93. So approximately 1295. The guess is that he never married. He writes things about being married and why that's not a very good thing. So people have guessed that he wasn't married because his wife probably would not have let him publish things like that. They don't know where he was born. Don't know where he lived. He seems to wander around a lot, as was the minhag at the time by Jews being persecuted. It's not clear what he did for Parnassa. If he had a Parnassa, he may have been made money from his poetry in the beginning. He may not have. He may have been a doctor. He may not have done. It's really not at all clear what he did or didn't do when he wasn't writing these books. The first 40 years of his life, though, he wrote, I think in his own words, he said he wrote 20,000 lines of poetry, about half of which he wrote down, half he composed, and the other half he didn't write down, which is, I think, quite a lot of poetry. And I found this wonderful English translation in rhyme of the Hebrew is also beautiful, so I don't know which one is more beautiful, but I like the word lawn, so I thought I might ensure. Anyway, I'll read the Hebrew because it's also poetic. Just to show, 13th century is not a particularly good time to be Shempo in Father Kara. The lot of the Jew was not so easy. He says, "Hayismach hayodi ha'umlal." How can the downtrodden Jew be happy? The chelko ben bnei adam mekulal. His portion amongst people is cursed. Im hayom ye ashrot kecholayam. If today he's as rich as the sand of the sea, the machay aloch arum v'shalad. By tomorrow he'll be going naked and cast away. For my yit, should we start a yilut Yaakov v'yizkeh? I don't know what you're trying. I think it's a typo. I don't know what that means. What can a descendant of Yaakov say to merit? God oivo yidinehu ufalal, when the enemies are judging him and finding him guilty. V'ech yarim l'rosho Yisrael, how can the Jew raise his head? He's rolling in the blood of his wound. Elohim in Amcha Asher Asher Az, God save your people, Tikdash et Shimcha Mecholal, who sanctify your profaned name. That we can find. And another poem from Sefer Maalot. V'kol geva yireh ani b'shevet aval zmano. Every man sees poverty when the stick hits him, as time hits him, he's wandering around the land to find his parnasa. I think it should be Avar, maybe, but must be Ever to make it right. The troubles surround him from every side, and Mikol Sad Yavar, Shod Vasheva, and trouble and strife comes from every side. Adki Matok Lish Ligabe Nachal Lishkod Al Gadish Vekeva, until it's sweet for a person to be able to inherit and lie down peacefully in his grave. So things were not particularly nice for him. He reached the age of 40 and I guess had what you would call nowadays a midlife crisis, or in other words, he became frummer and he decided he should give up writing poetry and concentrate instead on science and philosophy. I'm not sure. I took this quote from the Jewish Quarterly Review article by Malta, I think. I didn't work out where the actual source was. I have to track that down. But he writes, "Amati el nafshi ligaresh shira shaleach." I said to myself, I'll get rid of the poems and to send it away. Liot adina kedin seam shaleach, and to send it like the seer on Yom Kippur Azazel. But the shuv belev tahor lekel nosei avon v'chet salech v'adir neder leval emod od v'soda. And I decide I'm going to do tshuva, and I'm going to repent and return to God who bears sin and forgives, and I'm going to make a vow never to do any more poetry. V'katavdi Lazer Sefer Kritut Veitim Biada. I've written this as a bill of divorce and I've given it in her hand. He also says in his last poem, Ve'ele Devarei Shir Achronim. These are the last words of my poem. From now on, I'm not going to write any more poetry or any more poems. So he made a conscious decision to give up poetry and to get on with the serious stuff, which is philosophy and science. And that's his chooser. He is criticized by academics for not being original. Criticized? They comment that he doesn't really seem to have any original thought. Which is what he himself says, he's not claiming to have any original thought. As he says, again, I didn't put the Hebrew, but this is translation from the Sophia and Torah. Most of my words in this book on the sciences are the words of the chief philosophers and experts. I have not innovated anything on my own, but only collected them from the books that are distributed there. And similarly, in De Ara Philosophia, he says, Aristotle said we must be informed of the opinions of the ancients concerning the soul to be aided by them. Whichever of them we find to be correct, we shall retain. And whichever is not correct, we shall abandon. So he's taken Aristotle, he's taken all of the other philosophers and translated them from the Greek into Hebrew, made them accessible. But he's selling himself short. And I think his brilliance is in taking the bits that are right and leaving the bits that are not right, rephrasing them in ways that subtly change the meaning to make it or comment on the original. So that I think his lack of originality is, in fact, that is his originality, the way he brings the sources that he brings and how he brings them, how he combines Plato with Aristotle, how he packages things together, is his skill and his brilliance. And he made all of these works accessible to the 13th century Jewry who did not have access to it before that.
It's actually in Hebrew.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they, because
the Jews must
reading Arabic.
Right.
Spain.
Arabic, I think, in Spain. Yeah. I'm not sure when it says being Spanish. I also don't know where he was in Spain, but I think they're right. I mean, Rambam was writing in Arabic. In Spain. He's only slightly afterwards. Not Hebrew. He wasn't writing, but he was writing textbooks, and he was writing Dvarim Shel Kedusha. I mean, this was the way to find God. He was writing. He didn't see himself as writing books of philosophy as much as writing books which teach us how to get to God. And he wrote them in Hebrew because they should be accessible to the scholar. It's a good point. I don't know why he didn't write in Arabic. So no, good point. So you have. In Hamavakesh, he writes down some of the books that he's already written. Some we have and some we don't have. So I think these are the first ones of the list at the back of the books that we looked at. So I guess I need to go through again now. This my knowledge was sufficient to attain in my childhood, and these are the children of my thoughts. In my youth. His youth, I mean, if he started doing this in his 40s, in his youth, he's not all that young, but anyway. I think I'm going to switch the order around here, because I want to move number 7 to later on. So number 8, he says, the reasons necessitating writing these opinions in this book are two. The first reason, which is more necessary, again, this is a treatise, this is a summary of all the philosophy in this book. The first reason, which is more necessary, is that a Jew who wants to know them can know these opinions with the true knowledge, and he'll be able to discern the true from the false, the impossible from the possible. So the doubts concerning what they said in physics are few, but concerning what they said in metaphysics are many. Therefore, this book will clarify which of their opinions have been demonstrated, which of them have not been demonstrated, but which they said according to what appeared to them. Right. Therefore, I translate these opinions from the Arabic language into the Hebrew language and compose them from books that are widely distributed, so one who wants to know them can find them all collected in one book and will not need to worry himself by reading all those books. For their opinion on physics and metaphysics are included in this book in general and in detail. In other words, he's it's really, it's one reason, but it's two reasons. One is he's made it easier just to go to one book instead of having to shop around for the other books. It's an encyclopedia. Secondly, he wants you to get the record straight. There's so many ideas going around which aren't valid, or which don't make sense, which don't add up, or people are believing things because they read it in the editorial of the Times of London when it's not been proven yet and not compelling, and he wants to discern what's true from what's false, or what's been proven to be true, or what's agreed by everybody from what is perhaps not. And the second reason is that most of what has been translated, these opinions, into our language has been corrupted. They are not clear as they should be, so that when one who studies these translated books can understand them in their true meaning. In other words, he is an excellent translator and an excellent writer, so that he reads, flows very smoothly, and he's very clear in what he says. So he's letting him go, anyone else who's tried this game before him, that he can do it better. Fine. Now Rambam invented, that's the wrong word to use, I'll rephrase that. It's hard to see before Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah that there were Ikare Emunah in Judaism. There are things which Jews believe and things which Jews don't believe. The concept of an Ikar really started with Rambam. And Ibn Falkira continues in that, and he really summarizes basically these are Rambam's Ikrim, but he restates them. The seeker asks, is the dialogue, the seeker is trying to find all the true wisdom of the world. The seeker asked, what is the Ikar of the Torah? The believer responded, the essence of the Torah is to believe that the world has a creator, that he is one, that he brought all creatures into existence from nothing, and to believe that the world is created, not eternal, apart, anti, or whatever that means, as the deniers maintain. In other words, he's rejecting the Aristotelian eternity of the universe and believing in Bria Yesh Mayim. But he causes his prophecy to overflow upon the prophet who is the messenger, sent to inform people of his will, that he changes nature by his hand and performs miracles. I'm not sure that's in Rambam 13 principles, the fact that God does miracles. It's kind of included in somewhere, but it's not necessarily true. And to believe that the souls remain in existence after departing from the body, and punishment and reward. He does not mention here Mashiach, he does not mention Kriyas HaMeisim. Maybe that's implied by the soul remaining in existence. He certainly knew Rambam, and it's similar but different. One of the main themes in his books is the importance of studying philosophy to understand Judaism properly. The Maimonidean controversy was not one controversy, but was many, beginning in Rambam's lifetime and continuing, I suppose, until today. The first attacks on Rambam were on his halakhic methodology, the fact that he didn't bring the sources for his halakha, the fact that he seemed to argue against the tradition and argue against what people are doing and be innovative. So there were many arguments in Rambam's lifetime about his halakha. The argument on Rambam's hashkafa really started after Rambam's death with the when Moreh Nevuchim became more widely available in Hebrew translation by Ibn Tibbon. It reached the rationalists who left Spain went to Egypt, others went to Provence, and that was a safe haven for them, or I guess Portugal, but mainly Provence. When Moreh Nevuchim got to France, that's Germany, and they saw what was there, they started a huge controversy about the Rambam philosophy. And having read Moreh Nevuchim, they also realized that the first section of Yad Chazakah, the Mishnah Torah, was also suspect. The first four chapters of Yesodei HaTorah are very dodgy. The main argument, and we'll talk more about this in one of the later classes, the main criticism of Rambam, and we saw Ibn Daud say this explicitly, and we'll see the alternative later. The main criticism is that Rambam uses philosophy and redefines his Judaism to make it fit with philosophy. He accepts that Aristotle has the truth. Since Torah is also the truth, he makes the Torah fit in with Aristotle. There's really primarily only one point of argument between Aristotle and Rambam, which is the eternity of the universe. that's just about the only time we part company with Aristotle. And he explains why he does so. I mean, he says it would undermine everything in Judaism if the universe is eternal. And he thinks Aristotle's proofs are not compelling. But in terms of reinterpreting Psukim to make them fit, he turns the 7 days of creation into seven spheres of matter. He turns all the prophecy in Bereshit, you know, Yaakov wrestling with the angel becomes Yaakov grappling with his inner self. Everything, all the simple pshat of the Psukim is overturned to make it fit in with Aristotelian, what Rambam thought was Aristotelian philosophy, although as Micha pointed out, there was some Platonic stuff thrown in there as well. He picked and chose from the statements of Chazal to make them fit with the philosophy. Basically, he turned Judaism into philosophy, which is very dangerous. Which is very dangerous, and more than that, according to some, was heretical. It's dangerous because where are the red lines? Where are the limits? What if a philosophy says, how far can you go? When does Judaism stop becoming Judaism and become just another branch of philosophy? Also, on what authority can you rewrite the Chumash and Chazal to make them match up with Aristotle? We'll see, actually, a possible answer to that, although I'm not convinced it's Rambam's answer necessarily. The alternative, though, is equally difficult, which we'll see next week or week after, which would be to take everything literally, which can lead you to all sorts of crazy places. If you really believe that when it says God spoke to Moshe, that he actually spoke with a mouth and with a tongue and teeth and all those kinds of things, which would be ridiculous. And to have a path in the middle is difficult. So the French rabbis who attacked Rambam were attacking him because he used philosophy to define Judaism, which is exactly what Ibn Salakira had spent his whole life doing. Understanding, claiming that you must learn philosophy in order to understand Judaism. Therefore, he was very vocal in his support for Rambam, and we'll see that soon. So he stresses over and over again the importance of learning philosophy in order to be able to understand Judaism. He says in Igeret HaVikuach, which the whole Igeret HaVikuach is not a big book, it's a small booklet, pamphlet. Igeret HaVikuach is in defense of Mor Nebucha. The book there is... So he says, philosophy is the Torah's sister and twin. They agree on the right and the truth. And if something is true, there are two sources of truth. God created the world in a way that there are two sources of truth. There's the human brain, which is rational, which can comprehend the world, which leads you to God and to the truth, and then the revelation of the Torah, which leads you to the truth. Since there's only one truth, they must both agree and lead you to the same place. And therefore, he says they work together as twin sisters. Now, there's a difficulty for all of the rationalists, which is not, I'm not sure really where it's addressed, which is if you can get, it is addressed. If you can get to the truth using philosophy, if Aristotle can get to the truth, what need is there for Matan Torah? Why have a Torah, why have a revelation independent of philosophical truth? I think Rambam would say, I'm not sure, I think Rambam would say that you can get there with philosophy, but not everyone's smart enough to do that, and therefore God gave a shortcut to the Jewish people and gave them the Torah so they can get there quicker, gave them the answers.
The theory that with enough philosophizing by infinitely clever philosophers, you reach the conclusion that we should keep this book?
I think Rambam would say it's how you say the purpose of keeping the spot is to allow us to reach the highest levels of morality and ethics, which is the ultimate goal of philosophy as well. Because the mitzvahs are a crutch, a way for Jews to get there quicker. but it's not the mitzvahs in and of themselves. That's the whole last section of Nebuchim, is all Tamei mitzvahs, is all explaining the reasons for the mitzvahs. And basically, the reason for most of the mitzvahs is to wean us off idolatry and lead us to the right path. But it's not that the mitzvahs in and of themselves are important, as much as they're a tool to get us to where we need to go. And it's much harder without that tool. You've got to be clever to get there philosophically without the tool. But I think, and if you look at the end of Moreh Nevuchim, the famous mashal the Rambam has of the palace. Are you familiar with the... Not that one. There's a palace, and he's describing different kinds of people, and there's a royal palace, and people are way out and nowhere near the palace, and they're not much better than animals, and there's people kind of in the courtyard but don't really know where the door is, there's people on the inside, there's people in the inner palace. You've got more in the book in here? No.
Basically,
in the inner palace of the king, people that just do the mitzvahs are only about the third level. They're just doing the mitzvahs without thinking about God and about the purpose for it. The people in the inner courtyard, the inner throne room of the king, are the philosophers. Everything is a means to get to that ultimate state. To do that, Rambam lost the concept of a personal God. Prayer is very difficult for a philosopher. I mean, he explains why and how prayer works. Hashgacha changes its meaning if you've got a God who's much more abstract than the Garden of Eden would have you believe. But that was the criticism of Rambam, that he's relying on philosophy and that corrupts us, and therefore distorting Judaism. And he was accused of heresy, and they burned his book. Ibn Falakiyah, source number 11 in Hebrew is the same as source number 7 in English. And it's just interesting what he says about the rabbis who are attacking Rambam. He's speaking politely. No, not really. Rabbim mi'amei ha'aretz, many ignoramuses, asher mechokhma rekim v'dalim, who are empty and poor of any kind of wisdom, yaksher v'or ha'inyanim, can't understand the idea, k'shiyavim mechaber raya medivrei chokhmei ha'umot, v'divreihem be'ineim divreihem b'telim. If the author brings a proof from a non-Jewish source, these fools think it's all worthless. Why? How can you possibly learn from non-Jews? V'amrim ki ein ru'i l'kablam. We don't want to learn anything from non-Jews. V'lo yizkiru, v'lo yizkidu, v'lo yu'alev l'olam. We shouldn't mention them. We shouldn't remember them. We shouldn't have anything to do with non-Jews and non-Jewish sources of wisdom. V'lo yavinu eile haftaim. These fools don't understand. Chaser lev, so they're lacking any heart, any intelligence. Ki ru'i l'kabel ha'amit mikol adam. That you should accept the truth wherever you find it. Afilu shiyeh pachot mimenu, even someone who is less than you, or mi'am acher, or someone who is not Jewish. V'im yichtov devar mimah shama b'shmo yichtavenu. If Rambam writes something yichtov devar mimah shama b'shmo, you should write down anything that's true. V'ein ri'la habit.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
You should write it in the name of the
You should not plagiarize?
Yeah,
fine, that's what I would like it to say. Oh, b'shma yichtivinu, I see. V'im yichtav devar, v'ma shama, b'shma yichtivinu, write it in his name, good. V'ein ru'i la'bit el ha'omer, el ha'alama'amer. Don't look at who said it, but look at what they said. K'mo shama ha'cham, like the ha'cham said, da'ha emet v'teda ba'aleh. Know the truth and know the masters of it. Rambam says the Shemona Prakim. Did she now? Really?
He's
asking about things like Kabbalah. Yeah.
And how
it defeats the
Kabbalah,
like corruption and everything. He says,
don't look at the message,
look at the message. Don't judge Judaism by the Jews. That's a recurring theme in Ibn Falakiyah. Mm-hmm. The mashal of, which also Ibn Zawud used last week. The mashal of Rabbi Meir learning from Acher. Take the message and forget about the messenger. Rambam says this in Shmona Prakim. He says that he's not going to mention the names of the sources in the Shema Sakim, because people will reject them if he says things that are not from Jews. So he's just going to, he's saying up front, he's quoting from all sorts of things, but he's not going to tell you the source, and you can just trust it that it's the Rambam. And so he's really arguing on Rambam here, saying you should quote the source, you should attribute your sources. And truth is truth. Doesn't matter who says it. When in spirit, I suggested to Rabbi Haber that we should put in non-Jewish quotes on some of the pages to elaborate to express the ideas that we were talking about, and we had quite some discussion about whether to do that or not. But I suppose this is the issue: whether truth is truth, regardless of who says it, or whether truth is only meaningful if it comes from a source that you can trust and know, and you should not quote any non-Jewish sources, anything outside of our tradition. Both are valid approaches. In Sefer Ma'alot, he says, elaborate, therefore, this pure class of men intend to take the correct way in studying the Torah and philosophy, which are two sisters, according to every true philosopher, in the correct order, and strive to perfect the intellectual virtues, the general principles of which are mentioned in the Holy Torah, and the details of which are explained in the philosophical books, composed of the method of demonstration, and to perfect the moral virtues, the general principles, or the details of which are explained in our Torah. It is not as ignorant thing that philosophy, which is a demonstrative science, contradicts our Torah, for God forbid that our Torah should contradict the truth. Philosophy is true, science, philosophy are true, Torah is true, therefore Torah must say the same thing as philosophy, and Torah has the general, the big picture, science has the detail, and so by studying philosophy you can understand the Torah, and there can't be a contradiction. I was working today on something which hopefully will bear fruit in the future. I mean this is great, and this is what he writes. Is that true today? Would we, the three of us here, the 100 people in this room tonight, 100 and something listening to this year, do we agree or disagree with the proposition that science is true, and therefore Torah, there can be no contradiction between Torah and science?
It is in theory, but the one problem with today is that there's in the modern age, there's access to so much information. I don't think it's humanly possible to filter out what's true and what's not.
But if something is accepted as true, does that mean that it, the Torah can't possibly disagree with it?
I think it's dangerous to eat fish and meat together.
Okay, I wasn't even talking about the... Yes, right. I don't know that they've done studies. I'm not sure they've done enough studies on people eating fish, on Jewish people eating fish and meat, see whether or not it's dangerous. I'm thinking just very simple things. The Copernican system, that the Earth revolves around, the Earth and the other planets revolve around the Sun.
Is that contradicting
the Torah? Yes. Let's say it might. It might. I mean, the Torah many times talks about the sun rising and the sun setting. And we do talk about that today. There are those today who reject the Copernican system because it contradicts the Torah. Whether they're right, I had conversations with people who said that that's what the Goyim believe, but we know that really the sun goes around the earth. I'm not saying they were the most intellectual philosophers in Judaism, but there are people who believe such things. If science would prove that, whatever it is that if science can demonstrate there was a Big Bang, which happened 15 billion years ago, does that mean that Torah can't possibly disagree with that, and therefore Torah must also be interpreted in a way that means that? Or do we say that... it seems to me that nowadays we don't say such a thing.
In theory, I think the science is some of our science, but having said that, the full truth of the science has never been revealed to us, and it's a constant learning process. And so if we discover something outside the Torah that can help us understand that we feel more correctly, then there's no need to call it contradiction. That's because there's been incorrect
Okay. I don't disagree with you. I'm not sure that's the mainstream. It seems to me there are people who reject science by and large and just say the Torah is true. And if you don't believe the Torah, you're a heretic. If you believe the world is older than 6,000 years, you're a heretic. 46%, according to a new study, 46% of Americans believe the world was created within the last 10,000 years by God.
I think it has to.
You think it has to? No, that's 46.1%.
I know this.
Oh, you're not American. Well, a study released this week.
Well,
so, something like that. And 13% believe that it was intelligent design.
I think it was the 7 days of creation.
Oh, right.
The 7 days of creation were obviously not days. You know that before science was invented. Because daylight wasn't invented.
You knew that before science was invented.
No, if someone who comes and meets the Torah,
yes,
in the year 1000 BCE will say...
They didn't know it was 1000 BCE, so... No, it
wasn't. That's not underestimated. we'll read it and say... And then we'll say,
only on day four. Only on day four do they get sun and moon.
Okay, fine. So in the last 50, so what was Bayi Erba Yiboka? And then I understand that obviously it wasn't night and day, and then, we experience today.
We don't have any documents from 1000. We don't have any commentaries on Chumash from 1000 BCE, but I'm not sure that anybody before whatever, Wilson and Tinsley or before Hubble really knew that there was the cosmic background radiation. I don't think anyone really discovered that in the Torah.
No, I'm just saying that it was possible to know so long before that evidence.
That it wasn't,
that it's not simple
routine. So
now that we know about the Big Bang and stuff,
we can help
us in that
with the Torah. Okay, so you're agreeing with the Mitzvah Kera. So when something is true in science, we then use that to reinterpret the Torah. And Rambam would say the same thing.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. But if there's a clear contradiction,
You think that's not an example of a clear contradiction?
No,
the Torah can't mean 7 days literally, and therefore we'll use science to understand. Fine.
Right, but if it says something like we discover... I don't know, like that pigs through the tub and have 7 years.
Babaruta. There was a pig in Indonesia called the Babaruta, which had split hooves and chewed the cud.
What's a pig like?
It's not kosher, it's a pig.
Oh, right.
Pig with Moshe has a chewer on it.
Okay, well, I can't think of a good example. It feels like you can just to go with the cards.
Yeah.
But where they can be reconciled, they should be reconciled. It has to be reconciled.
Okay. I think you have kind of three options nowadays, and I'm not sure that what you're saying is the dominant one. There's one option which says the Torah is true and everything else is lies that non-Jews say to try and corrupt the youth of the Jewish youth, and they're all in whatever, and you can't trust scientists, and therefore believe the Torah. And anyway, science doesn't know what it's talking about. It changes its mind every couple of weeks, so it's completely wrong, and therefore stick with the Torah. You know you've got the truth there. Maybe science will eventually discover the truth, but when science discovers the truth of the Torah, we know that science is right, and until then it's wrong. Zamir Cohen wrote a book called The Coming Revolution, in which he tries to find bases where science agrees with Torah, and therefore shows the Torah is true, because science agrees with it in a couple of places. I find it one of the most distasteful books I've ever had the misfortune of ever looking at. But that aside, option one, Torah is true, everything else is irrelevant, and certainly can't be more true than Torah. Which is, I think, what the French rabbis would say when they attacked Moreno Brooklyn. Option two is that science/philosophy, well, philosophy today, I don't know if people believe philosophy is true in the same way that Rambam believes it is true, but certainly people tend to believe in science. Science is true, and therefore Torah must say the same thing as science. Or we ignore it. I mean, I don't know what you do. You have to reinterpret Torah to make it sort of science, which is what some people are doing. dangerous path, because by next week the science may change, and because you may be taking Judaism and Torah and mean something kind of different. Middle option is try and compromise and pick and choose. This does fit, this doesn't fit. I can live with this, I can live with that, I can't live with the other. Right. Allah, I suppose, people like Joel Schroeder or Nathan Abieza, they try and show there's not very much. Oh, option four is to say they're talking in two different realms, which is of Yeshua Soloveitchik. The science talking about science and Torah talking about Torah and the two different worlds. What was the non-overlapping magisteria, in the words of Stephen Jay Gould? That they're not discussing the same issues or topics, and therefore there cannot be any agreement or disagreement between them. Anyway, so Rambam, Ibn Daud, Ibn Fawakira, we'll see others later, definitely took the approach that philosophy is true, Aristotle is right, and the Torah is really only a shortcut to get to the Aristotelian truth, and therefore if there's any apparent contradiction, you must reinterpret Torah to get to the truth. He spends a lot of time showing that you should and may and must study philosophy. In Reshit Chokhmah, he says, in this book I'll explain clearly, whether we're allowed to learn other wisdom in terms of Torah or not, or whether they argue, contradict things in the Torah, Misha ain't lost seichel, like somebody who's got no brains would think that science disagrees with the Torah. There are people who have no brains, whose souls are in error, who think it's utter from the Torah to start looking at these wisdoms in philosophy. They made this mistake because they're idiots, Baila Chachmat, in terms of these philosophies, that Ilu Yadu Amisatam, Hayodim Ki Adavar Hefech Mimma She Chashru. If they would know the truth of philosophy, they'd realize that the reality is the opposite of what they think. Velo Kashi Yachshu Chashre Lev, Ki Philosophia Hi Chachma HaMoftit, Soterat Toratenu Chalila, She Tiye Soterat Aymet. And not like the idiots, the people with no brains think that philosophy contradicts the empirical and the conflict of the Torah, Chas Shalom, Aval Hamodiyah Ota, Hakitesh Chashav Kiya Mezhira Alea Mayem Bifilosofia Notem Ederech Tarotein Oktosha. People think that if you learn philosophy you're going to go away from Torah. Ad Shechashvu B'machshavatayim Harakot Meha'emet Ki Kod Vashu Nizka Filosofia Hu Shav V'Sheker. And they then start thinking that everything in philosophy is false. Even if there's clear and compelling proof that this philosophy is true. So you only have to look at what happened to Christian philosophy to see his complaints here are still relevant in the 21st century. Now, having said that there can be no contradiction between Torah and philosophy and that you should reinterpret Torah to match with philosophy, what happens when they do contradict each other? It says, because essentially it's far be it from me to consider any of the words which oppose our Torah, let alone to believe anything contradicts our faith. Whatever we accept their words is true and agrees with our religion, this alone is true. I eat the contents of the pomegranate and discard its peel. For example, you said, Daniel, that the bits that match up are true, and anything that is really a contradiction we have to reject. And the pomegranate is Rabbi Meir learning from Acher. Right? Acher became a heretic. And Rabbi Meir continued learning from him, and when they asked him, we'll see it later on, when they asked Rabbi Meir how you can learn Torah from a heretic, he said, I eat the fruit and I throw away eat the fruit of the pomegranate and throw away the peel. And he says also, Mevakesh, do not believe anything of the words of the philosopher, small or great, that contradicts anything in the Torah. The belief in the Torah is essential since it is from God and transcends reason, and leads to the knowledge of the truth. Most of the opinions of the philosophers on metaphysics are the opposite of the truth, and their opinions on physics are a mixture of truth and falsehood. So he seems there to be saying entirely exactly the opposite of what he said on the previous page. Now, the reason that he puts such faith in philosophy, also the reason, one of the arguments of why we should put faith in philosophy, which actually we saw last week in the Kuzari as well, in a different context, and which apparently goes back to to the 2nd century, to Aristobulus, which is quoted in the Art Scroll, Tisha B'Av's book, I think. The story, it's a well-known story because it's an Art Scroll about Yirmiyahu writing the book of Kinot, of Echa, and he sees Plato comes and sees this, why are you crying? He says, Beit HaMikdash, he's not seen this story, Beit HaMikdash is burned down, and Plato says, but it's only a building, why are you crying? And Yirmiyahu says, you don't understand, all of your knowledge and wisdom is only in the merit of the Beit HaMikdash, which is when it's standing, and that's what I'm crying for. There was a tradition, and that's taken from Torah Ha'Asham by the Rama, that story. There's a tradition that the Greek philosophy began really with Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo was the wisest of all men, he knew everything. People learned from him. We saw last week in the Kuzri, he says that the Greeks got it from the Persians, and the Persians got it from the what did he say? Persians got it from where's Rambam from? Where's Avram Avinu from? Chaldeans. That they got from the Chaldeans, but ultimately it comes from either Shlomo Melech or Yechezkel Hanavi. There was a belief throughout, going back to the 2nd century, throughout the Middle Ages, that all wisdom ultimately came from Shlomo HaMelech. So if what the philosopher was saying was true, it really was Jewish. And if the Jewish rabbis were not saying it, it's because we've forgotten it because of the galus and because of the sorrows that were happening, and we're just reclaiming what was really ours. Nowadays you hear a similar argument in terms of music. You hear people say that all music really comes from the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore there's no such thing as non-kosher music, you can just take and borrow it. So in terms of philosophy, that was what they said. He says, then he goes, Vikuach, Ein hefresh ben shir elu hakadmonim mimunoteinu o shelo yu. It makes no difference whether the philosophers, the early sages were Jewish or not. Kshiyi ha'iyun al derech ha'emet v'asharon mikol chitron lo nechushim yu mimunoteinu o lo. If their journey of discovery is correct, if it's true and in peace, lacking anything, then doesn't matter if they're from our faith or not. Me'achar she'otana philosophim kulo zmanehem b'chikirat otana rayot hamitiyot mehen, because they've dedicated their lives to discovering the truth. Ma'en she'en mehen hamitiyot v'ishtadlu lavdil elu me'elu. They've worked at what's true, what's false, and separate between them. Again, צריך כשנרצה להציג הדברים מצד השכל, נעיין בספריהם המחוברים מזה עניין. I'm not sure what that is supposed to be. Anyway, so therefore, when we want to understand these things, we should look in their book. שיש בהם מהאמת נקבלו, the things that are, oh, it's רימה, things in their books that are true we should accept, ומה שאינו אמת הוא מכי והוא מכי שדבר מתורתנו, נשליך אותו אחר גבינו, anything which contradicts the Torah we should throw away, ולא נעלה על לב, and not take into our heart. ונצטרך לספריהם מאחר I'm not sure the word supposed to be. שבת ספרי חז"ל מחוברים מזה העניין. I think עבד. עבדו. And we have to rely on the Greek philosophers because we've lost the books of חז"ל to deal with these issues. ואם כל זה צריך בהכרח להקדים לספריהם יושר המרות להיותו שלם בדעתו שידע מה איסור והמותר מה שיש בידו עם כל זה שאין כל אדם ראוי ואלא עמוקות. You should have to be careful when you're learning these books to make sure that you take the right stuff and don't take the wrong stuff. וזה מה שאמרו חז"ל, ראיתי בני עלייה והם מועטים. It's what חז"ל said, I've seen the בני עלייה, the people going upward, and there's very few. ולעומק אלו העניינים היו הקדמונים מהפילוסופים מסתירים אותם הדברים. And because these ideas are so deep, the early philosophers would hide them. So amrim otam b'chidot, and tell them only in riddles. The chachmenu is hirunu shelo ligalotam, and Chazal said not to reveal them. Kmo shedashu al pasuk fashim levushcha v'dvash lechlav tachav l'shonecha. Hide them under your clothes and keep the honey and milk on your tongue and don't reveal them. And that didn't say what I expected to say at all. I'm sorry. There are other quotes from him saying that the source of wisdom comes ultimately from Shlomo HaMelech. He does say that we need to go to the Greeks because the books of Chazal didn't write it down. But Chazal also knew everything that the Greeks knew. Okay. He defends Rambam in the introduction to Maamara. I'm not going to necessarily read all of it. The introduction here, he says why he wrote it. There's also a letter he wrote published at the end of Minchat Kana'at, defending Rambam. I think we'll have to spend another class looking at different defenses of Rambam. But as we go through this, remember the comment of the Ravid in Hilchot Tshuva about, right, Rambam says anyone who believes God has a body is a min, is a heretic. And the Ravid said that why should he call them a min? There were people greater than Rambam who were led astray by the Pshat of the Tanakh and by a Galata and believed the wrong things. I think it's parallel with this as well. Here it says, the first verse says to be, Achat filati. After my prayer, Amir ki akavana rishana b'zeh sefer, my main purpose in writing this commentary on Moreh Nevuchim, l'dabev mikrat inyanim sh'nizku b'sef Moreh Nevuchim, to explain the ideas of Moreh Nevuchim, u'b'edinat filosofim, l'ktuvim bo, and to explain the philosophy within it, v'lalti ha'dvarim sh'skimu aleyem u'mashach hakolem, to say what's agreed and what's not agreed. V'ha'mesupakim etzlam, sh'lam d'olam yitzitam, and the things which are in suffix, are not clear. V'rabim mechachmei taratenu, that's many of the wise Torah scholars, Shalaitasku Bachma Acheret, Elabshut Torah, we haven't done any other study except the simple meaning of the Torah. Ra'im Shain Ruida Tasek Badir Philosophy in class. They think it's not worth, you should not get involved with philosophy at all. Baboshim Achishim Rob Divra Kabbalah Mikublim and Vimalayim Sham. Because they say that philosophy contradicts most of the words of that we've received from the Nevi'im. Ki Hayemet Mashika Banu Mihim. They, these Chachmei Taratenu, claim that the only truth is that which we've received from the Nevi'im and from Chazal. V'achim Chachmei Torah, she'daskul b'Torah v'Chachma, but others who are wise in Torah have also involved themselves in philosophy. Ro'im ki ro'i l'kabel medivrayim, ma'ashish lehim ra'yot tichniot. They say we should accept those parts of philosophy which are compelling, which have proof, which makes sense. And those things which don't contradict anything in our tradition. And that is correct. Because there are those people who are like angels, and they know the truth with God's help. They know the truth without needing to investigate it. God lightens, shows them the way to go. They are the holy ones. Who always see God before them. They never take him out of their minds. And they are right in saying, this is the truth, I never learned any philosophy. I know the truth of holiness. Show me your truth and teach me. What's this supposed to be? Something. God should give wisdom from his mouth and understanding. Right? In terms of philosophy, that also comes from God. That is a gift of God. God only gives it to someone who exerts himself. It doesn't come as a free gift. It doesn't come as glory that God gives it. Someone who God loves, then God, if they exert themselves, they put an effort, then God gives it to them. Wait, is that the philosophers or is that the people who don't do philosophy? I'm not sure. Yeshachim milamata me'ela kol yidiyotem mitzach hakira ha'nashit. There are others lower than that who only know things through hakira, through investigation. Be'ezer seichel shetanim b'teva, using their seichel, which came to them naturally. V'heim chachamim v'chachma ha'nashit. They are wise in human wisdom. V'mash yasigu me'hadvarim or mitzach hakira tam le'nimtzayim. And what they can understand is through their investigation. V'eile shlam tam and their wholesomeness is based on what they can understand. And they have to understand, they have to study philosophy and science. Things that show nature through investigation. That people will understand and take the bits that are true. This is the Rambam in the beginning of Yisrael Torah says, the way to come to love God is to investigate the world, to study science and discover God through that. This is the lowest level according to Ibn Sakir. And they tell the story of Rabbi Meir, how can he learn from Acher when Acher is a min? The answer is that he accepted the bits that were true and he threw away the rest that was not true. Incline your ear to the words of the sages, the words of the wise, and set your heart to know me. The Zatam lo ne'emar, the Zatam doesn't say to know them, the wise people, but to know me, God. This is the path of many great and wise people. Lishmor zirei amechka, to study, to understand science or investigations, kol davar shetigu mitzarach hakira tichlit ve'ena keneged kabbalah, anything which is understandable and knowable and true, which does not contradict the traditions that we have. So that's the three levels that we have. There's people who say don't touch philosophy at all because it's dangerous and goes against Torah. There are those who don't need to touch philosophy because they get everything from God directly and don't need to worry about any other questions. And there are those who can only understand God through understanding philosophy and science, and through that come to discover God. And obviously Ibn Fakir is the third, would type himself in the third category and would say that the Rambam is writing for the third category. I'm not sure how different or similar this is to the Ramban, who defends Ramban by basically, he writes this to the rabbis in France, defending Ramban, saying don't put him in Kerem, for many reasons. One of the reasons he gives is he basically says, Rambam's writing a cure statement. And you need to say these kind, you guys don't need this sort of, you don't need more in the book, and it's not for you, you've got your direct access to God. But Rambam's writing for people who need to hear this kind of thing, who need a more intentional approach, and a more philosophical-based approach, and therefore don't put him in harem because you don't understand what he's really doing. I'm not sure if that's the same idea that Ibn Zakir is saying. And that's as far as I got. But he wrote huge amounts of material, all of which is quite comparatively easy to read, but just explains how the how the philosophical Rishonim understood philosophy and what they knew of Aristotle, what they knew of Plato, and whatever. And that's it. And hardly any of it is translated into English. That ends.